Porter QI presents Quality for the Rest of Us with Gail Porter, investigating the mysterious world of healthcare in search of adventurous innovation and exciting solutions from professionals across the nation. Before we get into the episode, I have some exciting news to share. When I first started out in healthcare quality, I found that even with a certification, I felt like I was having to go to my boss over and over again with questions. How do I do this? Where do I find that? I wished that there was a place I could go where I could find a friendly guide to my job. So now, with over a decade of experience in healthcare quality improvement, working with more than 100 facilities to improve their processes and patient outcomes, I am sharing that experience with you in a new book called Quality for the Rest of Us, A Friendly Guide to Healthcare Quality Management. Whether you're just starting out or if you've been in the field for years, you can find something that will help you in your quality career in this book. I share all kinds of free resources, explain how to manage different types of data, describe the quality cycle in plain language, and even give tips on how to successfully complete a federal abstraction audit. And best of all, I use practical stories and a conversational tone to teach the basics of healthcare quality management in a way that's approachable for anyone. You can find Quality for the Rest of Us, A Friendly Guide to Healthcare Quality Management, in your favorite online bookstores, and if you buy a copy and find it useful, I'd love it if you left an honest review. Reviews help readers find interesting books to read, and your help in spreading the word is gratefully appreciated. Thanks so much, and now on to today's episode. One of the first moments that I knew my husband was the one was during a game of Balderdash. In this game, an unfamiliar word is read aloud, and each player writes a made-up definition. Then each player votes for the definition they think is the dictionary answer, or which one is the silliest. I was surprised to hear a nearly identical version of my definition during the reading. Everyone in the room started murmuring, "That must be the real one. There's no way there could be two that sound so similar by chance." Well, it wasn't the right answer. I was wrong, and so was my future husband, who had written an almost identical made-up definition using the same pattern of puzzle-solving from the Latin prefix. It was true love. One of the great things about the game Balderdash is the wild assortment of unfamiliar words, and the dictionary is nowhere to be found. In fact, the game wouldn't be any fun if we knew the definitions, since the object of the game is to confuse people and get them to go with your definition instead of the real one. Winning the game is only possible because the truth is obscured. Every answer seems valid. But love and games aside, real life often doesn't reward bewildering your audience. We can't just hand out demerits to the audience if they fail to understand our meaning. If a presenter fails to make a point, no one shames the audience for failing to understand. The speaker's message fails because their delivery missed the mark. It puts a lot of pressure on the speaker to know their audience and prepare accordingly. Here's an example. When I taught patients how to administer insulin in the hospital, I used a long-standing teaching tool called return demonstration, where you ask the patient to demonstrate what you just showed them. It helps identify any misunderstandings that may have occurred. One hilarious example was a nurse who showed the patient how to inject insulin into an orange, because the texture of an orange peel is similar to a subcutaneous injection. The patient demonstrated the procedure flawlessly and then asked why the orange needed a shot of insulin. Miscommunication is a real problem in healthcare, and communication is often cited as a predecessor to medical errors. Nurses and other practitioners are thoroughly educated on clear communication techniques, with a heavy focus on assessment and evaluation. What if the patient cannot read? What if they don't speak English? What if they don't understand the changes to their medications? We are taught how to check for these problems, as well as how to solve them with creativity and empathy. As our data becomes more detailed, there is an increasing awareness in patient safety of the higher-than-normal rates of adverse outcomes in disadvantaged populations. For example, we know that the rate of deaths and injury during labor and delivery are higher among Black and Hispanic women. Everything from blood pressure to blood sugar can be affected by access to prenatal care and healthy nutrition. And the availability of blood banks and other surgical resources can vary by location and funding. There is a lot packed into that statistic, but change begins with awareness. Communicating about our goals matters a lot, because patients often decide whether we are trustworthy based on our goals and commitment to them. They want to know if we understand and share their goals, or if we are just imposing our will on them. That is why I am somewhat confused by the healthcare industry's response to these disparities in patient safety. I've seen commitments to reduce disparity in medical errors, for example. What does that mean to patients, to reduce disparity in medical errors? Suddenly, it's like we're saying, I see that your healthcare experience is awful, but don't worry, we'll make sure you're not the only one. I don't think that's going to be incredibly comforting. Disparity in medical errors sounds a lot like it means equal access to lousy healthcare. Do you think we could maybe aim a little higher than that? I understand the intent. The intent is to make sure that the high rates of harm among disadvantaged groups are lifted up to the national average. But our words matter, and realistically, the only thing that human beings manage to do equitably is dying. And no patient wants that kind of equity. So we need to carefully consider our stated goals before our patients start hiding from us in fear. So I'm going to honestly say that I don't want to reduce disparity in medical errors. I want to reduce disparity in healthy outcomes. You might be thinking, I'm just arguing semantics, but that's the problem. The very real problem of whether we should expect our patients to understand what we mean, or whether we need to clean up our jargon and say what we mean in clear language. Skip the acronyms, define the terms, and drop the industry lingo, so we can start talking about what patients want. Anything else just leads to our patients being confused and misinformed. I think that's what makes it such an odd experience to hear healthcare professional groups talk about misinformation these days. They throw out all this technical verbiage and then say that they are the purveyors of truth, the safeguards from misinformation. But I'm not convinced that they even understand what they're saying. I recently saw an outcry on LinkedIn from a post about the new app, Billy, which is geared to helping patients find billing information about procedures by providing a search tool using the procedural CPT code. The objections were that most patients do not know what the procedural code is or how to obtain it. Without a crosswalk, data dictionary, or translation of some sort, how would they use the tool? The app developer received that criticism and asked for machine-readable documentation with the information, stating that they would be happy to integrate it into this tool. But in the midst of this conversation, I started to wonder why government agencies that utilize these codes do not provide the requested materials to the public in the first place. Why is it so hard to know what you are diagnosed with, or what you're consenting to? Then I saw an article from the Association of Healthcare Journalists that really got my attention. The article advised consumers of healthcare to be more aware of nuance in health journalism, urging them to understand the finer details of biostatistics and epidemiology. That's a nice sentiment, but it's never going to happen. They gave the example of evidence-based studies reporting on the rate of medical errors in the United States, which led to a hyperbolic claim about patient safety. I'm sure you've heard the claim, medical errors are the third leading cause of death in the U.S. There's some evidence that these claims are sensationalism. Are the deaths caused by medical errors, or do they just coincide with medical errors? Are there other types of accidents included in the population? The code-based mortality data used in the studies can sometimes be a little vague about what they mean, but the study's aim wasn't to sensationalize medical error fatalities. The intent was actually to urge further research and intervention in preventing medical errors because they can be dangerous and deadly. They actually were asking for better data. But which player in this game of Balderdash, medical edition, has the right definition? Should we enroll our patients in four-year programs to learn our jargon and understand nuance? Or should we proverbially throw out the baby with the bathwater and just dismiss patient safety as an issue because it's difficult to capture the data? Absolutely not. Even with vague coding and technical jargon, there are measurable problems. The Joint Commission reported that in 2020, there were 173 Sentinel event falls. Just 2 years later, in 2022, that number increased to 611 falls, resulting in serious injury or death. That's roughly 450 additional people who broke their bones or died after falling while under the care of a healthcare provider. Those numbers were better during COVID than they are now. and that's real data that can be presented and understood simply. I am loath to disregard the urgency of medical errors. Yes, it's difficult to track with current reporting procedures. Yes, there are data issues. But there are also significant increases in harm that should not be overlooked as nuance. Why not suggest ways to improve data accuracy in reporting? Because asking patients and consumers to understand the finer points of biochemistry and robotics is not going to go well. Unfortunately, that's not the direction we're going, though. Multiple healthcare lobbies have joined task forces devoted to censoring health discussions that could potentially propagate misinformation. For example, I saw this weird misinformation program where a healthcare lobby said that they should take the lead on managing misinformation because consumers should not trust health professionals. Mind you, those are the same healthcare professionals that the lobby actually represented. Why is the lobby trustworthy, but the professionals they represent are not? Would the professional clinicians that are supposedly being represented really agree with that messaging? I am always frustrated with that kind of tone. Health professionals work really hard to obtain the degrees required to practice, to get certified and licensed to practice safely, and to acquire the necessary base of knowledge and experience to care for their patients. Degrading those efforts in the professional field is not a classy move. I cannot help but ask what information the lobby is worried about propagating that it does not trust these highly educated, experienced professionals to communicate. And what patient is going to spend the time looking up what the lobby says when their healthcare professional is standing right in front of them anyway? If the patient leaves a visit confused, it's not because the healthcare professional is trying to misinform them. It's usually because there was a failure in communication and the truth got obscured. And what about when the truth is unknown, like in our Balderdash game? Misinformation truly thrives in the unknown. For example, misinformation about COVID thrived in an environment of unknowns and tightly controlled dialogue. Normal practitioners waited on phone lines for hours trying to find out what to do with their infected patients, and often left those calls without any real guidance or treatment recommendations. As we healthcare workers eagerly joined public health webinars, we often found that the authoritative answer changed by the week. And to be fair to those in charge, it was a novel virus. What they knew about it was changing and updating by the week. However, friends, family, and neighbors on social media were being very consistent in their messaging. Amidst the lack of real data, it is no wonder that people turned to social media and junk science to find answers. Any answers at all. It was like a game of Balderdash with millions of players making up their own answers, and average patients and healthcare workers were asked to take a guess on what the correct answer was. The dictionary playbook was not yet written, and in that environment, two people with the same answer have more validity than the one right answer that's poorly communicated. In a time of chaos, people search for consistency and what seems right. The honest, unadulterated truth was that we didn't know, that anyone who claimed to know or have all the answers was really just guessing, and that our experts were trying to write the dictionary as quickly and accurately as possible. What would happen if we just said that? When the authorities say they don't know, I am far less likely to search through my neighbor's DIY medicinal recipes for a cure. I'm more likely to say, wow, if they don't know, then my neighbor is definitely grasping, instead of controlling the flow of information after communicating poorly. We need consistency and transparency when we communicate with the public. We need to be honest when we are guessing or waiting for more data. We should say it clearly the first time and allow individuals to make up their own minds about the evidence we share. And it's our job to use plain language that our audience understands. It is not their job to learn our technical profession just to participate in healthcare. We cannot herald the importance of access to healthcare and then ask our most disenfranchised patients to learn biostatistics before we will talk straight with them. We should give people the opportunity to ask questions and read back what they heard against what we mean. And it doesn't give anyone great confidence in our medical leaders if they cannot communicate effectively. Consider the great physicist Richard Feynman, who famously invented the simplicity proof of understanding, used by many engineers and teachers today. He was preparing a freshman lecture, and Feynman wrote the following phrase, "I couldn't do it. I couldn't reduce it to the freshman level. That means I don't really understand it." Since then, his reflection has spawned the more common idiom, "Say it to me like I'm six." If we can't explain these complicated medical issues in simple terms that everyone can understand, then who's going to believe we understand them ourselves? It's time to assess our ability to communicate. A well-informed public does not need someone to filter misinformation for them. They'll be perfectly capable of that on their own. Today, if an organization says they are controlling misinformation, I now assume they are poor communicators who don't understand the information they're trying to censor. Why let the mistakes made in communication during the COVID-19 pandemic rob us of excellence in health research, hiding it away for fear the public might misunderstand the nuance of our field's inaccessible jargon and opaque data analysis techniques? Rather, let's teach our researchers and leaders to communicate better so the public understands what the data means in the first place. Say it to them like they're six, because that is the proof of our understanding.
Thanks for listening to Quality for the Rest of Us. If you found this episode helpful, please consider liking and subscribing so you'll be notified when future episodes come out. If you have thoughts or questions, you can email qforus@porterqi.com. And if you're interested in joining our community, visit porterqi.com. You'll find podcast archives, helpful articles, innovative tools, and a knowledgeable group of professionals just like you. That's porterqi.com. I hope to see you there.